And we're back here on The Scoop as we continue to wrap up the NFL season. We're going to see how all the other teams in the NFC North are doing. And here to help us take a look at where the Green Bay Packers are currently sitting
is the editor of the Acme Packing Company SB Nation site, Jason Hirschhorn. Jason, thanks so much for joining me today.
Yeah, ready to talk some Packers football at a time when that's the last thing that's in the news cycle.
Yeah, for those who maybe aren't aware of what's going on, the Philadelphia Eagles celebrating their Super Bowl win, and they took care of both the Vikings and the Patriots in pretty dominating fashion in the final two games of the season. So now everybody focuses on how they can get to the Super Bowl next year. For Green Bay, they got a start on that process a few weeks ago when they made some big changes on the staff on both the offensive and defensive side of the ball. Joe Philbin comes in to be offensive coordinator. Mike Pettine comes in to be the defensive coordinator. So, Jason, let's start on the defensive side of the ball. Dom Capers out as defensive coordinator, which was a surprise to some. And it just seemed like it was time to kind of shake things up a little bit. What was your reaction when Green Bay decided that it was time for Capers to be shown the door?
Well, the idea that they would finally move on from Dom Capers seemed a fait accompli by the end of the season. The defense, granted, with all those injuries have to be calculated in, still underperformed. It was a problem for the team even before Aaron Rodgers went down. And after several seasons, not necessarily as poor performance as they had in 2017, but underperformance in general, it did seem like the coaching staff was ready to move on, specifically Mike McCarthy. And that's what we ended up seeing. That was actually a really quick trigger on making Dom Capers firing official. Usually they waited, in some cases, as much as like a week and a half to make those decisions. They did in the past with Bob Sanders, the previous fired defensive coordinator. They've done it with Sean Slocum, a special teams coordinator that they had for several years. But with Capers, it was pretty quick. It was after a couple of days.
The new defensive coordinator brought in Mike Pettine. What are your thoughts on what he can bring to this Green Bay defense in his role now as defensive coordinator?
Well, they've already touted a lot of the words you hear with almost any defensive coordinator hire, that it's going to be attacking, that it's going to be multiple, and that to some degree is going to be true. Mike Pettine, at least the last time we saw him as the head coach of the Cleveland Browns, did like to use multiple fronts. It was a 3-4 base, but you were seeing a lot of four-man fronts, a lot of three-man fronts with only three linebackers, in addition to just the actual base defense, something we didn't see a lot from Dom Capers and the Packers the last several few seasons. So I do think you're going to see more variety in terms of the alignments and maybe more variety in terms of the personnel that's actually on the field. But I think it's actually going to be a more simple offense than what we've seen either from the Packers or from Pettine in the past. Pettine spent this past season as consultant with the Seattle Seahawks. They have one of the simplest defenses in the NFL. I don't mean that in a pejorative way. It is very straightforward. You know what they are doing. They're going to beat you with execution. And that is something that the Packers, if they're able to fill some of the holes in that defensive roster, should be able to do as well. Maybe not to the degree of the Seattle Seahawks necessarily, but better than we've seen from them the last few years.
With the offensive side of the ball going to Joe Philbin, who was the offensive coordinator with Green Bay in the past, it seemed like they wanted to go more of the familiarity route and tried to go back to what really worked with this team on offense. We just saw when Rodgers went down that Brett Hundley really struggled at points to try to keep the offense moving. What do we expect to see from Philbin to try to maximize the supporting cast around Rodgers?
Well, unlike with some of the other OC hires we saw this offseason, I don't think we can really say what Philbin is going to bring to the offense schematically. That's not to say that he's not going to have some say in that. It's more of the advantage of bringing someone like Philbin, someone who Mike McCarthy has worked with in the past, and someone who actually was in Green Bay prior to McCarthy's arrival as head coach, is he's someone who can actually go to the head coach and say, I don't think this is a good idea. We need to do something else. That was something that at least reportedly had been an issue amongst the coaching staff the last few years. Just simply Mike McCarthy felt that he was going to have final say and everything. Granted, he does have final say, but he was going to override a lot of suggestions from some of the younger members of his staff. With Philbin, you at least have another voice in the room that carries weight. He's going to be leading those offensive meetings. So from that perspective, I think you're going to see a lot more variety just because it's going to be another voice really in the room as opposed to McCarthy's voice filling up most of it. In terms of what schematically we're going to see, we still need to see what the Packers do with that roster. I think you're going to see that receiving core change significantly, even if they don't move on from either Jordy Nelson or Randall Cobb. There's free agency in the draft, and for the first time in several years, we can expect the Packers to really take a serious approach to bringing in some players on the offensive side of the ball that aren't just, you know, fill gaps. You could see them bring in perhaps a Marquise Lee or a receiver that, you know, isn't a top-level player, but someone who could come in and play a meaningful role right away. And you could see the same thing happen in the draft as we've seen for several years. So until we know what the roster is going to look like around Aaron Rodgers, it's hard to say how the offense is going to adjust, other than you can expect it to look at least somewhat different than what we've seen in the last year.
One of the other big moves in the offseason was Ted Thompson being reassigned to a different role within the organization, new general manager for Green Bay. And despite all of the fans who were kind of questioning why Green Bay wasn't more aggressive in free agency throughout Thompson's tenure, you look at the numbers that the team put up and the success that the Packers had under Thompson as a general manager, and it's really hard to come away anything other than impressed with what he was able to do during his tenure as GM.
Yeah, and I think it's one of those things that in time, a lot of the people who criticized Ted Thompson and wanted him gone will come to realize that really he was one of not just the best general managers in the NFL, one of the best in Packers history. And it was why the move was so surprising to me. Thompson was probably getting close to when he was going to step down voluntarily. Based on which report you believe, perhaps he did so in this instance. It's hard to say, but this was surprising because even though the Packers clearly had issues that Thompson was responsible for, he has helped them build this depth of talent that has guided them for the past 10 years. And he seemed pretty qualified to figure out how to fix those problems this time around. So that they moved on from Thompson is a pretty big deal, not just because any GM change is a big deal, but because he had been so successful. And Gutekunst, granted, he comes from not just that Ted Thompson tree that's been so successful, but really that Ron Wolf tree that has populated so many of the good teams in the NFL's front offices. From that perspective, he looks like a pretty good hire, but any GM hire is a roll of the dice. And as good as Gutekunst might have been in his previous roles, there's so many things that he hasn't had to do before that he'll have to learn now. So perhaps it will be a godsend for the Packers. Maybe a more aggressive approach to free agency is going to reignite that team and lead to another Super Bowl run. That's certainly on the table. It is also on the table that maybe Thompson's eye for talent, and granted, he's still in the front office and he'll still have some input there, but him at the top of it maybe was more valuable than the average fan believed.
Talking to Jason Hirschhorn. And Jason, some news today in the NFL in regards to Jimmy Garoppolo's massive contract extension. And that's going to have a lot of ripple effects, not only for a team like the Vikings, who are looking for who will be their next franchise quarterback, and they may go out and spend big money on Kirk Cousins. There are some other options as well. But it also affects all the teams that have quarterbacks coming up that will be signing extensions. And Aaron Rodgers, one of those quarterbacks, as the Packers are going to be looking to extend him in the near future. Based off of what Garoppolo was able to get, what sorts of expectations do you have for the extension that Rodgers will likely sign?
Well, it's not just the total amount of money that Garoppolo is going to get on this new deal that's going to affect that Aaron Rodgers negotiation that could happen this offseason. If you're unfamiliar with the deal, it's officially a five-year, $137.5 million deal. The key number, though, is that he will earn $90 million over the first 3 years. That is essentially the equivalent of three consecutive franchise tags. So to get an idea of how valuable a quarterback is, someone with exactly seven NFL starts was just paid the biggest contract in NFL history on a per-year basis. So for someone like Aaron Rodgers, a multiple MVP winner, a Super Bowl champion and Super Bowl MVP, who is, let's just say, conservatively the second-best quarterback in the NFL, if not the best quarterback in the NFL, with plenty of runway left, this doesn't just set your floor. This also puts you in a situation where you can demand things that are not traditionally put in even the contracts of NFL superstars. So if he wanted to ask for a fully guaranteed contract, something we just do not see in the NFL, that might be on the table now. He could ask for maybe not necessarily more money than Garoppolo, but a contract that guarantees all of that money. He could also ask for a contract that doesn't actually pertain to a particular number in terms of salary. It could be a percentage of the salary cap, something that would keep that contract from really ever going out below market value. If he asks for, just pick numbers at random, 20% of the salary cap, that number goes up with the cap as it rises. It doesn't become a value. It is always going to be 20% of that cap. And Rodgers can now realistically bring those things to the negotiating table because, again, if Jimmy Garoppolo, a quarterback who has started exactly zero playoff games, played in just seven starts in the NFL, if he's able to get that kind of money, what does that say about Aaron Rodgers?
Yeah, that is a great point. It's going to be a large number for sure, and it's just going to be really interesting to see how all of these quarterback situations play out throughout the NFL. Free agency is going to be getting underway in about a month, and Jason, you already talked about a couple of potential targets for the Packers, maybe at the receiver position. Who are some other potential free agent fits that you would like to see Green Bay look at to fill some needs this offseason?
Well, that offensive line that they have actually performed better than some of the numbers would suggest. When Brett Hundley was in there, he held on the ball for so much longer than Rodgers and so much longer than all but a few qualified quarterbacks that increased those sack numbers. Whereas if he released the ball in just 2.7 seconds, which keep in mind is above the league average, that number would have been less. Still, there are holes on that line, particularly at right guard. Jarry Evans is going to turn 35. He played very well considering when the Packers got him. He was signed the day before the 2017 NFL draft. I don't know that they want to bring him back and run through that again just because of his age and because they still would want to improve. And there are some free agents on the market who are not going to be cheap but might be affordable enough that a team like the Packers could consider them. Justin Pugh, a multi-position offensive lineman from the New York Giants, is going to hit the market. And he will likely not sign a new deal with New York just because they don't have the cap resources to retain him. If he's available and the bidding for him doesn't get totally out of hand, that's someone who could not only move in and start at right guard, but someone who could also fill in at right tackle if something happens with Brian Bulaga, either as a result of the ACL tear he just had or another injury down the line. It just gives them that flexibility to cover multiple spots and improve in one particular spot. That's the kind of move I think they could go for that maybe they would not have done under Thompson in the past.
Jason, have you had a chance to look at any of the draft prospects yet as the draft coming up here relatively soon as well? So plenty of areas for Green Bay to look at as well through the draft.
Yes, I would imagine with that first pick, that being the 14th overall selection, the highest pick Green Bay has had since 2009 when they selected B.J. Raji, 9th overall, you are going to see them try to get a pass rusher. Now, they've drafted defense in many of their recent drafts in the first round, but it is very difficult to find that impact edge rusher. It's one of the most valuable positions in the NFL outside of quarterback. And this is one of the few situations the Packers might be able to get one realistically. I mean, the last time they spent a first-round pick on a true edge rusher was Nick Perry, and though he eventually became a useful player, it took several seasons. They had to battle through a lot of injuries, and before that, it was Clay Matthews, and usually a player of Matthews' magnitude doesn't last on the board till the end of the first round. So if they're able to find, let's just say, a Marcus Davenport from UTEP, or they decide they want to go with a Harold Landry out of Boston College, these are edge rushers that at least seem to fit what the Packers generally look for at the position and what Mike Pettine has used in the past with his defenses, and that's the kind of direction I could see them going early. And then I think at some point on day two, those being rounds two and three, they're going to add another pass catcher. That could be a receiver or a wide receiver, or it could be a tight end, but it seems very likely they're going to bring someone in there just because outside of Devontae Adams, you have a lot of questions in that receiving core, and you don't want to put Rodgers in a position where he has to force a lot of contested passes when he didn't have to all the time in the past. So the best offense the Packers have had are when they had a multitude of talented receivers. They want to get back to that as soon as possible. That's why I think, again, on day two, they'll bring someone in. It could be a James Washington out of Oklahoma State, a receiver that will get tagged as being undersized because he's only 5'11", but he has 34-inch arms, which is roughly commensurate with someone who's about 6'6", so he's really a big receiver. He just technically isn't tall. That's the kind of undervalued receiver I could see them going for sometime after the first round.
Jason, final question for you. We've seen a couple of new head coaches installed in the NFC North this offseason. Matt Nagy with the Chicago Bears, an offensive-minded head coach, and Matt Patricia, the head coach for the Detroit Lions. He'll bring a defensive perspective there. Do you like either fit better than the other between those two?
Well, Nagy at least makes more sense given what's going on with the Bears. They spent not just the number two overall pick. They traded up in order to acquire the number two overall pick that they used to draft Mitchell Trubisky. Getting not just a head coach but an offensive coaching staff that is going to help develop him was the number one priority for that team this offseason. They brought in Matt Nagy, who was largely responsible for the offensive turnaround in Kansas City and specifically the career year for Alex Smith. They also brought in Brad Childress. He's not going to spend the whole year with the team. At least that's not the plan right now. But he was a key piece to really developing sort of those spread concepts in the offense, things that Trubisky ran at UNC, which is why those two things make sense. They also brought in Mark Helfrich, the former head coach of the Oregon Ducks. I couldn't tell you exactly what he's going to bring right now, but it really fits in with the kind of staff that they're building. All of that, to me, makes sense on paper. With the Lions, the defense was not great the last few years, but it wasn't a problem with coaching. It was simply a problem with talent. So bringing in Matt Patricia may not actually resolve any issues. It might just keep things coaching-wise the same on that side of the ball. Offensively, they're going to have Jim Bob Cooter back as the coordinator, so they'll be able to maintain at least some of what they were doing. But as good as they were in 2016 moving the ball in those short passes, they were not nearly successful this past season. And I wonder if how much if the issues there are really, again, personnel, not coaching. So with the Lions, I just don't feel like I know exactly what they're getting out of that staff the previous staff didn't offer. Whereas with the Bears, it's very clear. It's going to be fixing that offense and helping Trubisky develop, in their eyes, into a franchise quarterback.
Jason, great stuff here today. It was very excellent to get some perspective on where Green Bay's at right now, where they go the rest of the offseason, and with the Vikings locked in for at least two matchups with Green Bay next year. We'll maybe catch up with you during the season next year to preview those games as well.
All right, looking forward to it.
Jason Hirschhorn joining us here today to talk a little Green Bay Packer football as we, again, continue to finish up the NFL season. And you can find his work at acmepackingcompany.com. Also, for Jason, a member of the Pro Football Writers of America. So some great credentials there for Jason. And you can check out his work at acmepackingcompany.com as well.